On the trending 55 hot seat is Justice Minister and Solicitor General Doug Schweitzer, as he tends to join us on Fridays. And always, Minister, thank you for taking the time to chat with us.
Thanks for having me on today.
All right, Minister. Now, obviously, I know we've been talking about this sometimes off the air a little bit, and you're not just a minister, but also I understood that you had a U.S. baseball college career. A little bit about that. What position did you play? What school? And did you get scouted?
Well, you know, I played college ball down in California for a few years, and I was a pitcher and played a little bit of outfield. I could throw hard. I just didn't know where the ball was going. So I'd hit a guy, walk a guy, strike a guy out, but I always got opportunities because I could throw pretty hard.
Okay, nice, nice. And if you were to actually say one day, too, because, I mean, you did spend a lot of time pitching, some time in the outfield, if there's a player out there that you could compare yourself to that people would identify with, who would you say that would be?
Well, I don't know if I'd identify with any. I don't know if I was ever that good. But my kind of hero growing up as a young pitcher was Roger Clemens. He was just at a whole other level. I mean, when I was young, like, he was just the pitcher in the major leagues.
All right. And I know I am also a big fan of Rocky Roger. Can't deny that. We'll throw this one out there, too. Obviously, he was part of, like, you know, like some of that era that was stigmatized by the steroid era. Does he belong in the Hall of Fame, do you think?
Yeah, he belongs in the Hall of Fame. So does Barry Bonds. I mean, they were part of their era. That era, everybody was on steroids. They were the best of their era. They belong in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no, I can't even argue with that. Definitely with you on that. All right, now I guess we'll get to some of the questions of the week. And this one, obviously, we understand that you've put some police officers, I should say, in the Peace Region, Valley View, Beaver Lodge. And I know out here that there are some people too that are excited about that, but there's also some people, I guess, in Peace River detachments, high-level detachments, Fort Vermilion, High Prairie, and those around here. Is there an idea that they're going to eventually be getting some as well in a future date?
So, I mean, we announced last year, in response to the rural crime crisis that we have, you know, a $286 million partnership with municipalities and the federal government to bring more police officers to rural communities. This is the first wave of police officers, so we got about 46 new officers in Alberta. We're going to get 76 total this year, and then we're going to get 300 total new police officers over the next 5 years. So this is just the first wave, one of many. They're going to come here to help deal with a rural crime crisis, because we heard from Albertans that, you know, they want to make sure that the police respond. If there's a crisis, they want to know somebody's coming. And this is a part of that strategy to help cut down on the response time and allow our police to cover more territory.
All right, and in writing that covering more territory, I know Jordy from Fox Creek, he sent this one in, and one of his questions is that, you know, that there's such big, large areas to cover, and what could be done to reduce officers' response times, and in some cases, sometimes calls could be as much as 100 kilometers away.
Well, and I think it kind of goes back to, you know, a basketball reference, like zone defense. Like, the more people you have out there, the more territory that you can cover. And so the more officers that we can bring online, it'll allow us to cut down on the response time. So in rural Alberta, you know, historically we had about 1,600 police officers. We're going to take that up to 1,900 officers. That allows us to cover more ground. On top of that, we're going to have our rapid force, which is going to give sheriffs more responsibility. That's going to bring up an additional 400 law enforcement personnel on top that allow us to respond to emergencies in Alberta. So that's a huge compliment. Plus, we're also hiring on the back end, you know, civilian positions, which are going to help with the administrative burden that we place on police officers, help with the paperwork, because quite often now the officers have to drive an hour back to the station, fill out paperwork, whereas if we have the ability to support them with civilian positions, they could call it in from the car and stay out there in our community. So that's what we're investing in. It's the right thing to do, and it's going to make a real difference in rural communities.
All right, and also when last time we were kind of chatting about the changes to the Victims of Crime Fund and increasing that department's budget from $40 to $60 million, as well as expanding the scope. Now, I looked at the federal level, and I think not this government, but the previous federal government tried to pass some legislation in terms of increasing the federal Victims of Crime Fund, and I believe that was defeated last year in the Supreme Court on a constitutional challenge. Were there any lessons that maybe you learned from that outcome that maybe helped craft this legislation?
Yeah, we definitely monitored that case as it came down. It had to deal with some certainty around flexibility of payment. So we tried to build in as much flexibility into the program as well to make sure that it falls within the, you know, the precedent that we have in our court system. But it's really designed as well for public safety. That's why we made the changes, to allow us to fund positions for the Alberta Law Enforcement Response Team to, you have a child exploitation unit there that's done amazing work. They just recently, busted 18 people with basically a child porn ring that was going on here in Alberta. And they're doing amazing work. That's how you prevent people from being victimized, by making sure you have the right strategic investments to make sure we can respond.
All right, and I want to go back to a quote that you quoted in the legislature. I just have to look at it, and this one is, and I'll get you to explain the context on it. You were asked a question from the member from Calgary Mountain View, and among your responses was, however, often with the media, and particularly social media, the truth is inconvenient and the facts are of no interest at all. Just a little bit explaining on that context, and that I understand that was an ethics complaint that you were cleared of.
Yeah, I mean, I think our opposition is 0 for 70 in their ethics complaints that they've made against our government. They keep making up facts, and the ethics commissioner came out with that quote that I read off in the legislature, just in response to how the media sometimes reports cases. In this case here, it wasn't in response to radio stations, it was in response to one of our government-subsidized media outlets and how they've conducted themselves. So it's really making sure that people know that there's more to the story. Sometimes people are creating facts, creating conspiracy theories just to get clicks online. And it's just disappointing to see our politics degrade to this level. I mean, it's really, Alberta is a unique political animal right now in Canada. Like, we have such a polarized environment. We literally had a member of the NDP say that the only thing that makes him sleep well at night is the fact that Margaret Thatcher, the former Prime Minister of the UK, is dead. And he actually wished that she was dead 30 years earlier. And they're making these statements in our legislature, like, no one would have behaved this way, 5-10 years ago. But for some reason, our NDP think that that's fair game to behave this way. It's unacceptable in politics, and it's disgusting.
Yep, that was the member for Edmonton Gold Bar, I believe, Mr. Marlon Schmidt, that had made those comments, and those have certainly made their way around there. And also something else that was discussed, and we heard that like throughout the debate, and this is more of how the NDP used it, and it was referred to as Bill 30, American-style health care. Overall, is this, from what I understand, it's going to give access and reduce surgical wait times. What do you think is possibly, or that where they come from, is maybe American about it?
Well, the thing that's really interesting here, we have over 40 facilities in Alberta that fall into kind of the chartered services. So they provide various medical procedures, all publicly funded, publicly available. All we're doing is expanding the scope to allow for more charters to be issued in Alberta to go after wait times for hip and knee surgeries, things like that. We've had a long history of this. The NDP had funded these 40 organizations. We're just making it easier to have organizations like that providing medical services. It's been done in Saskatchewan, had a good track record there bringing down wait times. That's all that we're doing. This isn't some all of a sudden pull out your credit card to get access to healthcare. That's not what this is. This is publicly funded healthcare. Just let's make sure we have the best provider that's providing it for better, faster, cheaper services to get cut down on those wait times.
All right, awesome. And on top of that, too, I guess that's got to be welcome news for somebody who's been waiting for surgery for who'd be on a list for 2 years. Otherwise, that this could make a good reduction for that and get them on the, I guess, on the table quicker.
That's really what it's designed to do. I mean, you have people that are living in pain for years on end, like, that's just not acceptable. It impacts their ability to keep their bodies healthy. It cuts down on quality years of life. We just have to do better.
All right, and Bill 32, and I know that this one became very interesting because remember the last time we had chatted, we had also had mentioned that the other side of the floor had referred to referendums as an anti-democratic power grab, and this time I think with Bill 32, from what it sounds like, it's putting more hands in control of union members on where their dues are going to go. At least that's how I'm understanding it. And in terms of union dues, there are some examples that were given in the legislature, such as supporting anti-Israel organization like BDS or supporting the Venezuelan dictatorship. Now, if people want to support that, they can still support that under this legislation, can they?
Well, the thing here is that right now you've got so many union members that have no say in how their dues are spent. And yeah, I mean, how would you feel if you were a refugee to Canada and all of a sudden your union dues are going to pay for support of an organization that you left and fled, or a country that you left and fled? That's completely unacceptable. You should have a say in how your money is used. That's what this is doing, to make sure that some of these unions spend millions of dollars a year on a political agenda that their members don't believe in. So this really gives those members the ability, if they want their money spent on that, great, they can say yes. If they don't want their money spent on those types of initiatives, they can say no. It's empowering workers to make sure that their voices are heard. And particularly in Alberta, where a lot of those union dues are spent on anti-pipeline agendas. And a lot of these people work in the oil and gas industry. So for them, it's just, you know, they're fighting against themselves. It doesn't make any sense. So we're empowering those workers in Alberta.
All right, and I guess in saying that as well, we know the name Gil McGowan sometimes comes up in the legislature, and once again, I think there's something made to his $1.7 million contribution to the NDP campaign, and I think now that recent legislation passed would cap those types of contribution from big spenders.
It really, I mean, we're going to be bringing in some more legislation in the fall that's going to cap the ability of unions to contribute to political action committees and advertising campaigns during campaigns to $30,000. Instead of $1.7 million that they spent, the one union spent last go-around, they'll be capped at $30,000. So we have to get this big, dark money out of politics, and union members need to have a say in how their money is spent.
All right, and also as well, I know something that was actually asked by an email, and this one is about the potential creation of an Alberta police force, and the question is that compared to how much say that the provincial government has now over the RCMP contracts, how much more say could a provincial government have if it had its own independent police force?
Yeah, the Fair Deal panel recommended that we go down the path of establishing an Alberta police force. So we're examining the viability of that right now. We're going to have that review done in the first half of next year. And really, you know, some of the people that are making arguments for it are saying, look, it'll be accountable to Albertans instead of to Ottawa. That's some of the frustration that we have. We have many RCMP detachments that work really well with our communities, but we have some that break down where we have high turnover of people that aren't familiar with the community, that they're just trying to staff continually. And sometimes there's a breakdown of connection because policing is at its best when it's there at the local level. So that's some of the arguments for an Alberta police force, and we're looking forward to getting that review done.
All right, and you know what, a final question here, because I know you mentioned you were good with the baseball questions on the air, and I know I asked you when this off the air, so we'll cap it off on this note here, because I've been going back watching old baseball games on YouTube because of the obvious stoppage, and I asked you this off the record, but we'll put this on the record. Game 7, you're Grady Little. You leaving Pedro in there, or are you pulling him?
I'm leaving Pedro in there. The guy's a Hall of Famer. You don't know how it's going to play out. If he says he's good to go, you stick him with Pedro.
I don't know. He looked like, if you look at his eyes, he looked like he wanted out but had too much pride to take himself out. But I, as an old Expos fan, I definitely have some love for Pedro. Minister, anything else you want to add?
No, I just appreciate you taking the time as always, and I'm sure we'll be chatting here again soon.